DW Africa Link.
A warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program with me, Assumpta Latus.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. Glad that you've joined us. Remember, we're also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to drop your comments there and we will always read them whenever we can.
Coming up, Islamic State-linked militants in Nigeria have killed another abducted health worker despite an urgent plea to save her life.
You cannot tell me that Boko Haram will eat into the very fabric of this country. Up until when? I do not know. This has been on for far too long.
I feel so embarrassed and surprised that government couldn't do anything to rescue them.
And today is World Food Day. We'll be hearing why and how Senegal is at the forefront against malnutrition in Africa.
It's a region with a high potential of arable land. Over the last few years, we've seen that planted areas have increased.
Also on the program, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo holds emergency meetings with the leaders of Saudi Arabia about the missing dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you, but here's a chance to listen to other stories making headlines around the world, but in brief.
DW News.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Top U.S. diplomat Mike Pompeo said Saudi leaders have agreed to a thorough investigation into the disappearance of journalist and U.S. resident Jamal Khashoggi, who vanished from a Saudi consulate in Istanbul 2 weeks ago. Turkey claims it has evidence proving he was killed in the consulate. Saudi Arabia has strongly denied the accusations. Rupert Colville, spokesperson of the UN Human Rights Office, called on both countries not to withhold information.
Today, the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights is urging the governments of Saudi Arabia and Turkey to reveal everything they know about the disappearance and possible extrajudicial killing of the prominent Saudi journalist after he visited his country's consulate in Istanbul.
Elsewhere, the U.S. military said an airstrike last week in Somalia killed nearly 60 al-Shabaab militant fighters, the deadliest strike in nearly a year. They claimed no civilians were killed in the attack. U.S. forces have partnered with African Union troops and Somali security forces to combat terrorism in the troubled East African nation. In Ethiopia, lawmakers have unanimously approved Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's cabinet nominations, which include a record 50% female presence. In the new cabinet, women will occupy several key positions, including heading a newly created Ministry of Peace and the Defense Ministry. Ethiopia has experienced sweeping reform since Abiy took office in April. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The International Red Cross confirmed on Tuesday that a female employee had been killed after a terror group deadline expired. The aid organization said 24-year-old Hawa Mohamed Liman, who worked as a midwife, was killed in what it called a despicable act of cruelty. She was one of three people kidnapped in March by the Islamic State in West Africa terror group, an offshoot of the militant Boko Haram group. Another woman among the three captives was killed a month earlier. Microsoft co-founder and philanthropist Bill Gates has warned of a rise in extreme poverty in sub-Saharan Africa. He says a report from his Goalkeeper charity group shows that a majority of the worldwide population living in extreme poverty is located in the region. In an exclusive DW interview, Gates spoke of the challenges ahead.
Well, the world's done a great job getting people out of extreme poverty. But it's going to be a huge challenge in Africa with the population growth, the disease burden there. So our innovation in new tools, our aid generosity, we're going to have to do an even better job in Africa than we've ever done in the past.
Gates was speaking in Berlin on the occasion of World Food Day, which celebrates the founding of the UN Food and Agriculture Organization in 1945 and the goal of achieving zero hunger by 2030. The UN warns that conflict, climate change, and economic slowdowns could prevent countries from achieving that goal. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
And you're listening to DW's Africa Link program. I'm Assumpta Latus.
And my name is Isaac Mugabe. Remember, we're also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We'd like to acknowledge our users like Erdon Gin Joseph, who says hello, and Michelle Pusseru says he's listening from Italy, Rome. You're welcome.
We begin today's program in northeastern Nigeria. Islamic State-linked extremists have killed another abducted health worker despite an urgent plea from the International Committee of the Red Cross to spare her life. That's according to the Nigeria's government. The slain health worker has been identified as Hawa Mohammed Liman, who had been working in a hospital supported by ICRC.
And her execution comes only a month after a health worker abducted with her was killed by the same group, the Islamic State West Africa Province, the largest ICE-linked extremist group in Africa. Shortly before we came on air, I spoke to Annick Bouvier, one of the spokespersons for the ICRC in Africa, and she started by describing for me the kind of slain health worker that Hawa was. Take a listen.
Hawa was 24, full of life, and she became a midwife at an early age. People who knew her describe her as a sociable, dynamic and enthusiastic woman who was much loved by family and friends, and she was truly dedicated to her work, helping vulnerable women in her area. And she made the choice to work with us in the town of Ran in northeastern Nigeria.
We understand two more health workers are being held by this group. What kind of message do you have for the government?
There was this young 15-year-old student abducted by the group in a separate incident in February, as well as another one working for UNICEF. So for the people, for the group, we urge you, holding Alice and Leah, to release them safely. Their families, their friends, and their communities need them.
Annick Bouvier, spokesperson for the ICRC in Africa.
And many ordinary Nigerians have been reacting to the latest killing of the aid worker, calling for their government to do more and secure the country.
You cannot tell me that Boko Haram will eat into the very fabric of this country. Up until when? I do not know. This has been on for far too long. I think the interest of the citizenry is not even put as first priority at all.
I feel it's quite disheartening because we depend on the government for the protection of our society and our citizens. And I believe the government has all the intelligence that the intelligence agencies should have been able to provide so that these girls and other abductees will be recovered or released. But then this is happening at this point in time and is really, really very sad.
Well, I feel so embarrassed and surprised that government couldn't do anything to rescue them.
It's very disturbing. We feel very bad. And as a presidential candidate, I'm calling on those holding Sharibu as hostage to please release her. That they have brothers, they have sisters. And how will they feel if it is their sisters or their brothers being captive for so long? I'm calling on them, please, please release Sharibu.
That is reactions from Nigeria. And now we have reactions from our social media in Facebook. And Aliyu says, at such a young age, she took bulls by their horns. She saved humanity, took care of the sick and wounded. Her display of service to humanity is what we should all copy.
And Demola Olaweju says, trying hard not to think of what Hawa Liman must have felt in her dying minutes, believing that with a general at the helm of affairs in Nigeria, rescue would have come for her any minute, even as she was probably marched off to die. Anyway, we will come back to more of those comments on that side story whenever we can. But first, also, let's bring this other story making headlines across the world, and that is the U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, who's holding emergency meetings with the leaders of Saudi Arabia about the missing dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
The visit comes as unconfirmed media reports from the U.S. suggest Saudi Arabia may be about to say the Khashoggi was killed in their consulate in Turkey during an interrogation that went wrong. On Monday, Turkish officials searched the consulate building for 8 hours. Here's a report by Sophie Wingate.
After a long night of searching for clues on how Jamal Khashoggi vanished, Turkish police left the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, taking evidence with them. Turkish officials believe he was murdered and dismembered by a hit team. Living in self-imposed exile in the U.S., Khashoggi was a vocal critic of the Saudi regime. Riyadh denies any involvement in his disappearance. But U.S. media says the Saudis are preparing to admit that Khashoggi died during an interrogation at the consulate that went wrong. Amid mounting international pressure to explain what happened, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo traveled to Riyadh to discuss Khashoggi's disappearance with Saudi King Salman. For its part, the EU is calling for a transparent probe.
We expect full clarity from investigations to be done by the Saudi authorities together and in full cooperation with the Turkish authorities.
The Saudi kingdom allowing Turkish inspectors to search the consulate is a step forward in the investigation. But it was only after they let in Saudi officials earlier on Monday, as well as a team of cleaners armed with mops, raising doubts about how much evidence is really left.
Sophie Winget. And today is World Food Day. And because of that, we have a positive story for you. And it's about Senegal that has been recognized as a leader in the fight against malnutrition in Africa. Between 2000 and 2016, Senegal reduced undernutrition by 56%, according to a report released recently by Malabo Montpellier panel.
Amazing with those figures, Assumpta should say that. Anyway, while the health sector remains the lead sector tackling malnutrition in Senegal, there is evidence that making agriculture more nutrition sensitive and helping farmers increase their yields can improve nutrition outcomes as well. From Dakar, Emmanuel Lande sent this report.
In the southern region of Tambacounda, Senegal's cereal farmers are using mobile apps to plan the sowing and harvesting of crops and getting more organized than ever. The apps developed by the government and international partners help forecast the weather, keep on top of cereal prices, and provide information on nutrition or animal health, all with the aim of reducing poverty and malnutrition. The rainy season in Senegal lasts about 3 months, from August to November. Though the rain came late in the season, it's since been plentiful this year. Moussa Sano, a cereal farmer living in Tambacounda, 500 kilometres southwest of the capital Dakar, has already put the app to good use.
Bon, avec le changement climatique, ça...
Climate change can lead to problems like reduced yields. Climate change and the lack of rain has persisted, but the app has helped improve the situation. Because if we want to plant groundnuts, but we see that a lack of rain is predicted or the rainy season is delayed, we can opt for a different variety that is less of a risk. There are also different grains that do well with less rain, and we know in 60 to 70 days, we'll have a harvest.
Population growth, demographic changes, and urbanization are placing pressure on food systems to increase yields and make more food available. Sada Lee is Regional Director of Rural Development in Tambacounda. He says cultivated land has increased in the region. The mobile industry has attracted people back to the fields, knowing they have the support of experts at the touch of a button.
C'est une région avec un haut potentiel en terre.
It's a region with a high potential of arable land. Over the last few years, we've seen that planted areas have increased. When it comes to cash crops like groundnuts, we are the third biggest producing region in Senegal. We are fourth in maize and first in sorghum production.
Progress has been made during the last two decades in reducing extreme hunger in Africa. These are just some techniques used in Senegal that today make it a leader in the fight against malnutrition in Africa. For Sada Lee, helping farmers learn what grains and cereals are more nutritional and developing the sector is a win-win situation for rural farmers' pockets and their health.
For moi, l'agriculture doit devenir un métier.
I believe agriculture needs to become a profession so that the farmer feels that through this profession, he has an activity 12 months of the year. Thanks to this technological innovation, it really helps organize farmers and sets a well-defined crop schedule.
Senegal has also led the way in developing biofortified varieties of millet, beans and sweet potato that address various micronutrient deficiencies.
Emmanuel Lende there with that. A very important topic, Isaac. What do you think?
And of course, you know, that's why Joram Ihure says food security will be effective if we have proper storage of food. Simple, because we depend on climate, which might change any time and result to starvation. Hashtag World Food Day. Many thanks for that comment, Joram Ihure.
Welcome back to the show with me, Assumpta Latus.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe, and many thanks for those joining us right now on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Remember, we are broadcasting live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. And a shout out to Ephraim Njike, who says he's in New Orleans. And Eridon Jane Joseph, who says he's in Kumasi, Ghana. And so is Sichilima, who says he's listening to us live from Tanzania, Sumbawanga Nkasi. I guess, Assumpta, you know that place.
I know where exactly it is. Yeah. Now, coming up in the next 15 minutes, street children in Kinshasa find a sense of purpose and belonging through music and art.
Music is something that helps me when I think about bad things. When I play music, it helps me clear my mind. I also chose music and theater to be my work.
But first, let's go to Cameroon, where some rights groups are determined to end an old and painful tradition called breast ironing. It is a custom that is practiced on girls who are entering puberty early.
And through the practice, young girls have their breasts bound or beaten with stones. A women's rights group is fighting back against this tradition through education in schools. Eyon Ondong is among them, and Catherine Gensler has been following her story. And here's her report, presented by our own Wanjiko Maura.
Un sein est plus grand que l'autre. Donc il y a un sein qui est plus petit et l'autre est plus gros. Il peut arriver que...
Eyon Ondong, who works for the NGO Renata, is standing in front of 70 girls and boys at a primary school in Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. She is talking about one of the biggest taboos in Cameroon, breast ironing. The painful traditional practice still exists in today's society despite educational efforts. Those who do it believe it protects girls from sexual harassment and early marriage. Every week for the past 7 years, Dong has visited schools with her colleagues. Her involvement with the organization came about by chance. Dong was just over 18 years when she became pregnant, but she had trouble bonding with her newborn daughter. Until one day, the Tantins, aunties in French, from the NGO Renata invited them and other girls to a workshop for young mothers.
The only thing that motivated me at all was that at the end of the workshop, they covered the travel costs. And so I went there. But then the trainers surprised me. They taught us how to take care of our babies and ourselves. They also stressed that our lives are far from over.
Since it was founded in 2005, Renata has been working to create awareness of the breast ironing practice and its consequences, particularly through workshops for teenage mothers. 27-year-old Dong, who has been personally affected by breast ironing, grew up with her mother in Yaoundé but was sent to her grandmother's land for vacations. While she was there at the age of 9, her cousin told her about the breastplate. Her grandmother had taken a spatula, heated it in the fire, and pressed it onto the girl's chest.
When I arrived in the village, my cousin had already ironed her breasts. They took a spatula, which my grandmother was holding on the fire. Then she put it on my cousin's chest. When I saw my cousin crying, I asked her, "Such a small, hot spatula causes so much pain?" She said, "Yes, it hurts so much."
A few days later, Dong would experience the same unbearable pain.
My chest started to ache. I told my grandmother, and she just smiled and told me to go towards her. She told me to free my chest, and I did. She examined my breasts to see if they were growing. Later that evening, she took the spatula, heated it, and pressed it onto my breast. It felt as if my intestines were being ripped out. It was so painful.
There is currently very little data available for the practice of breast ironing. One of the most recent studies dates back to 2013 and was conducted with the help of German development organization GIZ. Compared to surveys carried out in 2005, the number of girls affected has fallen by at least half.
A report by Catherine Gensler there. It's really, really sad. Isaac, can you imagine? I mean, well, you're a child, a boy child. You don't really know exactly what we're talking about here.
Yes, sure. But I can imagine, you know, the pain they go through and they have to endure, you know, because of ironing breasts. Oh,
yeah, I know. Yeah. And we have comments here from Brazil. Dicky says, all these things are evil. How can people be blocking something from growing which is meant to grow?
And Teresa from Freetown, that is Sierra Leone, says, I don't have any tradition like that in my country, but I stand with the women in Cameroon to fight against it. Anyway, most of the comments here, it's, you know, assumed that people are really against this kind of practice.
Me too. I am against about.
Anyway,
against
we have another positive story coming on just right after this.
Africa on the move.
Okay. In Africa on the Move today, we go to the DR Congo's capital city, Kinshasa. More than 25,000 children there live on the streets. Poverty or death of a parent are some of the things that drive the children to the streets.
In many cases, these children are accused of witchcraft and are made responsible for the problems within their families. A handful of these children are lucky enough to find help. Sela Oneko visited a center that offers these children a chance to start over.
Les jeunes talents, the young talents. This is the brass band of Espace Masolo, a Congolese organization which helps former street children. Based in Kinshasa, the center works with children and young people and trains them in music and arts. The young men in the band are in their late teens and early 20s. All of them once lived on the streets. Mando Mengi plays the saxophone. He first came to the center 10 years ago.
I'm an artist, a musician. Art is in my blood. When I was a child living at home, I had to put up with bad conditions. I lived in different centers until I came to Espace Masolo, which trains youths.
Another band member, Gloa Mbwayama, plays the trumpet.
Music is something that helps me when I think about bad things. When I play music, it helps me clear my mind. I also chose music and theater to be my work, so I can make some money to live off.
Today, Gloa trained some of the younger kids at the center, and Mengi learned how to repair musical instruments, with which he earns his living. Everybody at the center has had a difficult life, and their reasons for living on the streets vary. Poverty, lack of care at home, the death of a parent, or divorce can all be driving factors. In DRC, superstition also plays a major role. In many cases, the children are blamed for the plight of the family and accused of witchcraft. Esconde Sundamasampu, an educator and puppeteer at the center, has heard the stories time and again.
When the parents separate, the children are left in the hands of the extended family. Sometimes they are deprived of food or of going to school. So the child says, I want to be free of this, and goes to the street to look for food.
Started by three local artists, Espace Masolo works together with shelters and identifies children who are interested in the arts. The brass band is one of its major projects, but it has also made a name for itself with its giant puppets. Stacked against the wall, Esconde makes the introductions.
This is Kamvunji. She's a kind spirit who protects the community from illnesses.
The puppet Kamvunji looks like a stocky little witch, with bulging eyes, a big smile, and hair made of straw. Next to her is the 3-meter-high puppet, Mugoga.
This puppet can't be controlled by just anybody, because if there is wind, you can fall over with the puppet.
The puppets are all made by the youths themselves, and when they perform, they slip into them, one person for each puppet.
Sela Oneko with that report.
Focus Europe.
Well, let's now move from African stories and focus on Europe for a bit. As many of you know, Portugal has a rich history of exploring once uncharted seas and lands such as Brazil and Africa.
But that history has also a dark side with colonialism and slave trade. In Lisbon, two separate public projects, that is, a slavery memorial and a museum celebrating Portuguese exploration, have sparked a heated debate on the country's colonial past. Jack Ciganeiro sent us this report.
These gentle rolling waves once carried African slaves from Lisbon to the New World. A memorial recognizing Portugal's role in the colonial slave trade will be erected in a grassy square steps away. But controversy about the country's history of colonization and slavery still continues. Descendants from former colonies like Angola and Mozambique say up until now they have been denied a place in Portugal's history. Beatriz Gomes Dias is the president of JAS, the anti-racism association that proposed the slavery memorial.
Sometimes I remember being a child and having no references, looking at the majority of Portuguese people and not being like them and not having a place for me and for people like me.
Politicians here often claim Portugal is one of the least racist countries in Europe. But Dias says many black Portuguese don't agree.
Black Portuguese are not recognized as Portuguese because they're always relating black Portuguese to the countries in Africa that were occupied by Portugal.
Dias is also a critic of the other historic project planned for Lisbon, the tentatively named Museum of Discoveries, which would tell the story of the amazing voyages of exploration carried out by the Portuguese navigators who first charted routes around Africa, India, and South America. Dias and other critics say the museum's theme would whitewash the violence of Portugal's colonial history. But in turn, the supporters of the museum accuse their detractors of denying the triumphs of Portuguese explorers.
In Portugal, there are some people who try to defend that slavery was almost an invention of the Portuguese. It is a false idea.
That's Renato Epifanio, the president of the International Lusophone Movement, which promotes Portuguese language and culture around the world. He says the Slavery Memorial and the Museum of Discoveries would complement each other in the right context. But that context doesn't exist in Portugal, according to anthropologist Bruno Sena Martens. Martens lectures at Portuguese high schools about slavery and colonial violence. He says there's a clear resistance to talking about slavery, and the official history curriculum downplays the subject.
Their argument is that if we are going back to this colonial past and to this racist history, we are only hurting Portugal. And ignoring racism or colonial history is to accept the continuing violence of racism in our society.
This is not a new debate for Portugal. Fernando Rosas, a historian and former parliamentarian, says the difference today is that researchers of African descent are changing how Portugal talks about its past. That's why he says the museum will need a different name.
Discovery Museum. We didn't discover anything because people was there.
That was a report done by Jack Ciganeiro. Now, from our Facebook page, we have some comments about this story. And Nia Mba says, Portugal was amongst the top and brutal slave traders the world have ever seen, while USA and UK somehow acknowledged this as part of their history. Portugal, Spain, France, etc. seem to get away with it.
And I remember, you know, learning history years back, you know, it was in 1498, I think, when Vasco da Gama and his expedition landed in Africa way back.
Where Africa thought not to be existing.
Exactly. Anyway, breaking news now. The US military has announced that its deadliest airstrike against Al-Shabaab extremist group in Somalia in nearly a year killed about 60 fighters. Mm-hmm. We will bring you details of this story whenever we can. And for sports lovers, tonight it will be a clash of the titans. Germany will take on world champion France. Remember last week, Assumpta, Germany lost to Netherlands 3-0.
Something that I didn't expect anyway, I should say.
Yeah. It's a do or die for the coach, Joachim Löw. And according to many Germans, I'm talking about 90%.
Many Germans.
90%
right, okay.
Want Joachim Löw out of the German squad.
What do you say?
My money? You like betting this evening? I think with the likes of Mbappe, you know, those guys are going to be on fire. And Germany better come prepared. Otherwise, France will be on a whopping, you know.
And that's the end of this show today. I was happy to be here. Thank you very much, Assumpta Latus.
And Isaac Mugabe.
DW. Made for Minds.